everyone, and welcome to the Happiness After Loss Summit. I'm Lois McCullough, and I'm your host for this exciting series of interviews. Our experts are going to motivate you and inspire you and share with you some simple things you can do in your life to break free from grief and live the life of purpose and passion that's waiting for you. I am absolutely delighted to welcome not one, but two excellent guests to our summit today. Now we have David and Veronica James, and they are experiencing the collision of baby boomer and empty nester. Upon sending their youngest out into the big wide world, they set her out to break the empty nest rules by selling everything and hitting the road. To become more than empty nesters, to be gypsies, gypsy nesters. Along the way, they began writing posts for their popular website, gypsynester.com, and rediscovered the couple who fell in love years ago. They've been full-time travellers since 2008. Their debut memoir, Going Gypsy, One Couple's Adventure from Empty Nest to No Nest at All, released in February and is available wherever books are sold. So I am so excited and thrilled to welcome David and Veronica to our summit. Hi, both of you. Welcome.
Hello, Lois.
We're glad to be here.
Oh, it's so wonderful. I feel like I've popped over for a cup of tea with friends. It's so neat to have two people here. So both of you, I've just shared a little bit about your story with our listeners. But is there anything else you'd like to add, or perhaps, you know, why happiness after loss resonated with you on a personal level?
Well, I think for me, Lois, is that I was a complete helicopter mom. Do they have that term in New Zealand?
Well, no, but I totally get what you're saying.
Helicopter mothers hover over everything their children do. And
I think it's a worldwide thing, Veronica.
Right.
I don't think it's unique to you.
Right. Well, I was so, I don't want to say bad, involved, that connected, that's a good word, that I actually worked at the school my children went to. I mean, I knew everything that was going on in their lives. And the idea of going back to my desk at the school without any of my children there was just something that I don't think I could have handled. So we needed to do something really drastic, something big, to kind of get over that empty nest hump.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, and obviously as a parent and a father, there's a hole that's left when your last child leaves and when all your kids are out of the house. But I could really see it with Veronica because she was so connected, like I said. And so, yeah, we felt like the way to overcome that was to get away from all of the, you know, the day-to-day reminders that were there and do something really drastic. And so we sold our house and took off.
I know that I've spoken to a lot of people who are at that stage of their life, and they see it as the end of their life almost. You know, it's, they've been, like you said, Veronica, they've been everything to their children. Their family has been absolutely everything to them. And now their family no longer need them. It's almost like they're left with an empty shell. And can't see the point in living life anymore because they just don't know what to do. And it is a very real loss for people.
You're right, and you mentioned that word ending, and we hear that a lot too. And what we like to do, and what we tried to do, was kind of turn it around into a beginning. A beginning where David and I could reconnect as a couple again, which obviously needs work in probably every relationship that faces the empty nest, because you don't really know who you are as a couple anymore. It's hard to go back to that, you know, fun-loving couple that fell in love in the beginning, mm-hmm. and, you know, and really find each other as a new, improved, older, wiser couple.
Right, and because there's so much focus as you're raising your kids on raising the kids, but caring for them, making sure everything's right for them, that there is a huge loss there, a big chunk of your life is taken away. But we did really think...
Well, that sounded horrible. Well,
no. But it's true. I mean, a big part of your life is not there on a day-to-day basis anymore. But like Veronica said, we chose to try to see this as a beginning as opposed to an end, a beginning for us as a new phase of our lives, but also a beginning for our kids as their adult lives. And so we felt like it also helped them to make that step into being independent adults, as well as us being a new, just the two of us again.
I guess, and it's a funny shift in mindset for the children to realize, actually, my parents have a life. My parents are real people, and it's not all about me.
Right.
But it's a good thing for them to learn.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think because we have three children, it was more of a gradual process. If you only had the one, I'm sure, then it would be really abrupt. But because we had three, then, you know, they left over the course of several years. And so there was some ability for us and for them to make that transition.
That's right. So I know that the two of you live a wonderfully exciting life, but when we speak about happy, you know, having a happy life, what does that actually mean or look like to you?
A happy life isn't a perfect life. That's the one thing I would really like to stress. I mean, we're happy. If we look at our lives and say, are you happy? Well, yeah, we definitely consider ourselves happy. But it doesn't mean that it's perfect all the time. And you know, little setbacks, which will happen. You know, I thought I had it all under control, the whole empty nest thing, you know, when we started off on this adventure. And I talked about it in our book about how I had a major setback about a year into it, because it kind of all just sinks in at different times in your life. You know, you think you've got it licked, and then all of a sudden, but you have to remember those setbacks aren't really setbacks so much as something to learn from. You know,
yeah, they're chances for growth, and it really did help us as a couple. Rather than pretend everything was always fine, we learned to communicate better and actually be a better partner to each other as we kind of rediscovered the two individuals that make the couple, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, happiness isn't always blissfulness. Happiness is, I think, to me, is always growing, always seeking that way to grow as a person.
That's a good way of looking at it, because that's what life is all about, isn't it? Constantly growing as a person.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts then on living with this loss in your life? So in the early days when you were going through those emotions, and what were your thoughts on what was going on in your life and loss in your life?
Oh, gosh, it's hard, and you can try and kind of run away from it, but it usually catches up to you at really inopportune times. I think the hardest for me still, and I just recently wrote about this on our blog, is leaving them after a visit. That still gets me, and especially if I see all three of them at once, it just is crushing. You know, but you have to remember it's the circle of life. You know, the goal of raising your kids is, you know, to come out of the end of it with happy, healthy, productive adult, you know. And it's important that, you know, you can give yourself a pat on the back. You can say, I did a good job, and this is, you know, a beginning again, not an ending.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that, I think that was a big part of what our decision was. That, and I saw the empty nest affecting Veronica more than it did me. Not that I didn't have any feelings about it too, but it was certainly affecting her in a more direct manner. I'm kind of an emotional train wreck.
I also think
that's common for the mother to feel that a little more than the father does. But as her husband and also a parent, I felt like it was really important that we together found our way through that, and not just for us, but also for the kids, you know, for them to be comfortable with this new phase of their lives and our lives.
You know, but it's a good thing because, that, you know, people ask us all the time, you know, how do your kids feel about, you know, what are you doing, you know, spending all their inheritance, or, you know, how do they feel about you being out in the world like this? And, you know, it's kind of funny because I think at first there were strong reservations. Our son actually saw our recreational vehicle for the first time and went, "You're going to live in your car?" You know, you can just be like, "What am I going to tell my friends?" You know? But now I think they're kind of happy that mom's not calling them up all the time, you know, going, you know, "When are the grandkids?"
Oh, thank goodness she's going to leave us alone for a bit.
Right.
And they also think it's interesting, you know, and they love to travel too, so they do. They think it's interesting, and it's nice. I think they're happy for us that we found something that we like to do.
Yeah, that we're passionate about, you know, because you just, it's a gift that you give the people that are close to you. It's being happy.
Yeah.
It really is important for them to see that you're generally a happy person.
Do you think that we tend to live our lives through other people too much? Is that why we have such a huge sense of losing something when it goes away? You know, because the children, we live our lives through them for so many years, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. It can be kind of dangerous. And I think Veronica tended to do that to a degree, because she was at the school that they were at and was there every day and was connected to them every day like that, that your, you know, life becomes intertwined. And so, you know, you become so connected that it's difficult to separate that, you know.
Yeah, and you know, it's the same thing. I mean, I don't think to a degree of just sheer pain of, like, losing a loved one to, you know, like when my mother died. I mean, that's a completely different kind of loss, but it's almost like you can't really prepare yourself for it properly because you don't allow yourself to admit that very thing. You know, I was living my life through my children, but I was, and I mean, I can admit that now. But, you know, I was their biggest cheerleader. I was the one that drove them to everything. I was, you know, doing, you know, all the things that moms do, you know, sewing tutus and helping build sets and, you know, bringing snacks to ball games and all that kind of stuff. And it is a big, all of a sudden, this community that you've built around your children, the other mothers, the teachers at their school, you know, my colleagues, because I worked, you know, my best friends were my kids, you know, teachers. So it's an abrupt, very abrupt snap. You know, all of a sudden this building community that you've built is gone.
Yeah, and I don't think you can really plan for it ahead of time. I mean, we tried, and I think it's important that you try to plan for it ahead of time, but you can't really put yourself in that position until you're there.
Right.
And then you have to deal with it as it comes and, you know, become a problem solver and move forward.
It's a bit like childbirth, you know. You can plan all you like, but nothing prepares you for the moment.
Right, you don't really have a clue how it's going to be.
You're right. That's a good analogy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so therefore, how do you make that mental shift to going from feeling like you've lost something to deciding that you're now going to move forward positively in your life and you know, get things back together?
Well, the thing we found, and it wasn't immediate, it took us over the course of nearly a year, which is really what the book Going Gypsy is about, is that first year of really finding this way. The thing we found was that if we went out and as a couple, as two people, partners, discovered new things that really helped connect us and new things in that things that neither of us had done before. So not like, you know, if I like to play golf, bringing her to play golf wasn't going to be a new thing. I would be the teacher or the instructor or whatever. So we found completely new things. We did most of that through traveling, but you certainly don't have to sell your house and go off traveling to accomplish the same thing. You just need to find new interests together to share and learn together. And that way you grow together, you learn at the same time, you discuss, you know, you're bouncing these ideas off of each other without somebody being in the teaching role or the instructor's role, whatever, the expert, and you both learn together. You have an equal footing on it, and it's that really was a huge discovery for us. And it it happened over the course of some time, but as we realized it was happening, then we decided, well, we should, you know, make that happen more often.
Right. I mean, and some of the things, because we always say, you know, please, you don't have to be as crazy as we are to be what we call going gypsy. But you can go out with your partner and take a cooking class. That's a great way to start. Or, you know, learn to dance the tango. Or you know, we did that, and, you know, it was
terrible at it.
or volunteer in your community together. That is so meaningful on so many levels, besides the fact that you're really going to be helping people. Take a college course together. Learn something new that's completely new to both of you, and it works wonders.
I think the thing that comes to my mind, the two things that really stand out from what you've just said, is one is to do new things really expands your awareness and expands your whole view on life and the world and opportunities and all of those things by going out and finding new stuff. But also the other thing, when you share a new experience like that, I think we are so involved in our daily life and the functions of our life and the practicalities of life, we have sort of forgotten why we got together in the first place, or forgotten fun stuff, and like you say, to rekindle relationships. And it might not even be your husband or wife or partner. It might be with family members or friends or whoever is in your circle, to share new activities is so important, isn't it, to rediscover yourself.
Absolutely.
No, that's exactly, I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what we discovered. And it worked wonders. It really did.
And we always have plenty to talk about, and that's a neat thing too. You know, I mean, I've always had this fear of us being that, you know, that couple in the diner that eating their eggs and
not say a word.
And really now, I mean, we have so much to say to each other. It's, you know, people are probably like, God, well, those people shut up.
Yeah, no, that is so true. It was funny, I was thinking the same thing. Okay, so our summit audience want to hear how to create a life of passion and purpose and fulfillment. And I know you've up sticks and moved on out into your mobile home and having a wonderful life. But what tips would you like to share with the audience on how they can find passion and purpose and meaning and all of those things that they're seeking?
Well, honestly, that what we were just talking about, I think, is the biggest one. And again, like we said, it doesn't have to be traveling the world or even your neighborhood or your region, but just something new that you can find, whether it's, you know, painting, art, writing, just something that you can put yourself into, your creativity, your spirit into. Find that and run with it, you know, go with it and just see where it goes. We didn't know when we took off doing this, we had no idea exactly how it would work, where we were going, what we were doing,
right. But
we just did. And so there's a momentum, you know, you see what works and use that, and what doesn't, then don't. And so that would be by far my biggest tip, is to just be willing to try new things, whatever they may be. You've got this freedom because, you know, like you were saying, you had this day-to-day life where you're so concerned with just making a living and making sure everybody's taken care of, the kids are taken care of. There's a real freedom that we felt with the kids all being grown and able to take care of themselves. That removes a big part of that worry from you. And so you have the freedom to go out and try something new. Jump out of an airplane. Whatever.
But, you know, the hardest decision, and this is a really big takeaway, I think, is the hardest decision of any of these, you know, actively trying to find things that interest you, actively continue, you know, to grow. The hardest part of that is making the decision to do it in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what, you know, I agonized over. That's what, you know, I had a panic attack over. That's what, you know, the whole deciding to do it. But once we made that decision to jump in with both feet, then it was just a matter of problem solving.
Yeah.
It was a matter of semantics, you know, what do we need to do now? And yeah, it got crazy there for a while. There was a lot of stuff to deal with, but you do it as it comes. You learn to do that. So make that decision first.
Right.
Be brave and make the decision. You know, if you wanted to write the novel that's been in you, you know, that book that's been in you all these years, or I don't know, you know, be a stand-up comic or whatever, you know, make the decision to do it. And that's the hardest part, I promise.
Right. Now, that's very true. And that's hugely important, I think, because as Veronica said, once you've made the decision, then all you're doing is figuring out how to make it happen. And, you know, we've all, parents are problem solvers by nature. I mean, we've had to do it for 20 some odd years, solving problems that came up with your kids. Now you just apply it to yourself. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes when we have spent so long not thinking about ourselves, thinking about others,
right,
it's really hard to know, well, what do I want to do? You know, any advice on, okay, people say, but I don't know what I want to do.
Right. Yeah.
Any clues on how they can find their passion again? You know, how do you rediscover what you want to go and do in the first place?
Well, we've talked to quite a few people about that, really in this exact same thing. And I think one of the keys, it's not what we did, but it's probably more sensible, is to start slow. Find something in your own town, a college class, an art appreciation, whatever, and start slow. Something that's not so drastic. And if that clicks with you, do it. If it doesn't, try something new, you know, try something else. And you can just go for a weekend or a week or whatever to explore things that are near your home, because wherever you live, there's really interesting, great things nearby that you've probably overlooked, because when you live somewhere, you just tend to overlook stuff that's nearby.
That's
so
very true.
And you can just start a lot slower than we did and not be as crazy as we were about it. And then find, if that's what works for you, you know, if you rent a motorhome instead of buying one for a couple of weeks and you go, wow, I love this, then sell your house and buy a motorhome. But you know what I'm saying. And you don't have to. We jumped in both feet because that's kind of the way we are, and we've lived our lives that way from the beginning. As you'd see if you read the book, how we met and all that sort of thing. We are the kind of people that jump, when we make a decision, we jump in with both feet. But obviously, a lot of people aren't like that, and it's very sensible to start slow and explore, you know, and that's, be an explorer. I think that's the key.
And I think a lot of times, anytime you have a loss, whether it's, you know, the loss of your kids in the nest, or the death of a loved one, or, you know, a breakup in a relationship, you do, it's like I was saying before, you do lose a built-in community. And so it's, you know, if you're very lucky, you have a community of people that will surround you too. But you are going to lose the quantity of people around you. And I think volunteering is a just excellent way to bring a community back around you. Because if you're passionate about something you want, you know, if you're passionate about animals, there's plenty of things. If you're passionate about you know, politics, there's plenty of places, and you're going to meet people who are like-minded. And it branches out from there. You know, you meet people, you go out to coffee or for drinks, and you learn about their passions. And it just opens up your world to all kinds of new places, and new things to explore about yourself.
There's just tons of possibilities. Architecture, history groups. We've talked to people who volunteer at national parks and work in the parks. All kinds of stuff like that. And, of course, you're going to meet the other people that are have like interests and have something to talk to them about and be interested and learn. And learning is a huge part of it, too. And that's a huge part of it, to not stop learning just because we're a little older, you know.
But you can't do that.
No. Life is a constant lesson. The big picture that's coming out for me, listening to you talk, and the constant theme I'm getting is that it's all about having companionship while you're doing these things. You know, you are very lucky to have each other. People who don't have each other still have other people. They may not have met them yet. But it's all about shared experiences, and if you're too afraid or shy or whatever to go and have that experience by yourself, pull in a friend or a colleague or an acquaintance or someone to go and do it with, and then you have someone to discuss it with, share it with later.
Very much so, very much so. And plus you'll meet tons of people while you're doing it too, and so you'll make new friends.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, because I'm not particularly great at just walking up and introducing myself to people, and so I understand to an extent. I wouldn't call myself shy, but you know that I understand that awkward moment of meeting new people, and that's why I brought up that suggestion of volunteering. Or joining, you know, I mean, there's plenty of like clubs and stuff. You could do book clubs and that kind of stuff. But when you're doing something else, it's so much easier. You're not like put on the spot to meet.
And you already have that interest in common, and so you already have a connection.
The icebreaker.
You already have a connection, and that's a great thing.
And we are so lucky these days with modern technology, how it makes so much available to us through the internet and other means. So even if you're physically not leaving the house to go and join a group, at least there's discussions, there's forums, there's all sorts of things that you can look at and would might pique your interest. Get involved. I think that's the other message that you're saying, isn't it? Get involved in life, get involved in activity, get involved in stuff.
And that goes to that keep learning that we were talking about. I mean, there's the information is so available now for you to keep learning. Be interested. If you're interested in a subject, the information is out there, and go find it and enjoy it and learn, and you'll meet other people that have the same interests.
That's right. So I understand that you have something wonderful that you are offering our listeners today, and it's something very exciting. Would you, one of you, both of you, like to tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. We want to share with the people listening in the chance to win. We're going to be giving away three of our audiobooks, which we are absolutely in love with. We wrote our book, Going Gypsy, One Couple's Adventure from Empty Nest to No Nest at All, and we're thrilled to find out that it has recently come out in an audiobook, and the actors are fantastic, and we can't wait to share with everybody our pride in we say they're so good that it's one step away from Brad and Angelina playing us on the Who's House on the Street.
Oh, well.
No, but it really is fun to listen to it and to hear it. And it's two different actors, male and female, that read our two parts back and forth. So it's conversational. It's fun. It's It's like one of the old radio plays.
Yeah.
That used to do that.
Yeah,
in the
old days. They do the voices, which I love. And when a character comes up, both of them are great.
So yes, if you'll come to the link that we'll provide you, you can sign up for our email newsletter and have a chance to win one of those copies of the audiobook.
Awesome, awesome. That is so fun. And to have an audio book is such a unique thing and so fun. That is excellent. And one day when it comes out as a movie, we'll all be going to watch as well. But for now, folks,
I was going to ask you, do you have Brad or Angelina's personal cell number?
we'll book them in. Yeah, we'll book them in for you. Don't you worry about that. So listeners, we have 3 audiobooks of Going Gypsy to give away. And all you need to do to be in the draw to be a winner is pop on over to David and Veronica's website at Gypsy Nesters. And the link for you to do that is in the email along with this interview. So pop on over there and sign up for their newsletter, and that will put you automatically in the draw to win one of those audiobooks. Awesome. Excellent. Thank you so much for that. Now, before we wrap up, I am conscious that we're on our time, but before we finish, is there anything else that you'd like to add or any other take-home message that you'd like to leave us with?
Well, one thing that popped into my mind, just as a little self-promotion, but I do want to make the point that there is also a regular book.
A reading book.
Audio. There is also a regular, you know,
paper book.
And also an e-book, too. So you can get the book in 3 different varieties. So I do want to mention that.
Yeah. But, you know, I think the biggest thing I want to say to everybody is allow yourself to be happy. You really deserve to be happy. Yeah. And you don't, you know, you were talking about those stumbling blocks of, you know, as parents, how we've been giving and giving and giving. And I understand that because I always say that half of motherhood is guilt. You know, all I do is, you know, half the time I'm thinking back going, oh, my gosh, did I just really do that? Or did I do that, you know, at that point? But, you know, allow yourself. Don't feel guilty because you're happy. And don't feel guilty because you want to take that first really hard step into happiness, because you do deserve it. You know, in our case, or in the case of you know, the family dynamic of it, is we did a good job. We raised great kids. You know, we deserve to be happy.
Pat yourself on the back and think about. And I think it's also important to realize that that's a decision you make to some degree. I mean, obviously circumstances happen and things happen, but for the most part, you decide whether you want to be happy and move forward or stay in one place and you know, not move forward.
Right. But you deserve it, and be happy, people.
Excellent. And it's all about beginnings, not endings.
Absolutely.
Yes, very much.
Very true. Excellent. So, folks, we are on our time, so that's all we've got time for today. I could talk to the two of you for the rest of the day, but we can't. So I'd like to say a huge thank you to both David and Veronica for your wonderful information you shared with us today and for your time today. It's been so much fun and a pleasure having you with us.
Well, thank you for having us. It was our pleasure.
Excellent. And thank you to all our listeners for listening in to today's session of the Happiness After Loss Summit. I'm Lois McCullough. Goodbye for now, and warmest wishes and love to you all.